Hey, AfterBuzzers, it's your girl Christine Alexis here with another episode of AfterBuzz TV's Spotlight On. Today we're talking with actor and producer Catfish Jean. We got that coming at you right now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
All I know.
Hey.
Chevy re-ride.
Take it. Whoa.
We from 6 to 7. We
cool. All the Zoes out there know what this is.
That's just my crew. How I do, yeah.
Hey,
Black Dot, I need to come back out with something else.
Give us some fire, clearly. What is up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Spotlight on AfterBuzz TV, where we get up close and personal with some of your favorite actors, figures in the entertainment industry, directors, everything, you name it. And today we are chatting with the super talented, super funny, and great Catfish Jean, who you may know from Survivor's Remorse and American Crime Story. The list goes on. So glad to have you.
Thank you.
So great. Where can everyone find you before we get started?
You can find me at the crib, sitting on the couch playing NBA 2K.
That was great. I love that. On social media. On social media.
Oh, you can find me on Cafe Jean on Instagram, Facebook, Twitterling. Everything is Cafe Jean.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thank you for reminding me that it is Cafe Jean. We Haitian, so yeah. I get that.
Yeah. It's a Haitian takeover.
It absolutely is. So I don't know if any of you AfterBuzzers know, but I'm Haitian. My family's of Haitian descent. Mm-hmm. And so is Catfish, which is dope because, you know.
We here. So you know what I did, right? I brought some mangoes, some plantains.
Oh, my God.
Because it's a Haitian takeover.
I love that. I have to say.
And I got the, listen, I'm going to tell you how Haitian it is.
Tell me.
I put the Yves Saint Laurent kudos on. I got the chapeau on, the Haitian hat. Listen, I came here. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be sitting with my Haitian sister. It's about to be a Haitian takeover.
I know. I was saying before, I messed up, but I had some real old-fashioned Haitian avoine, like, in a tray in my car that I was noshing on the way here. Was that you in front of me with the IET license plate?
Yep.
Damn, yo, you are thorough. I love it.
I'm thorough.
I took a picture, and I said, oh, my God. You know, there's not a lot of Haitians in L.A., so, like, I hope you guys know on AfterBuzz, like, This is real. This is genuine.
I mean, it's we have a group here. We call ourselves the Haitian delegation.
Yes.
So I mean, you know, most of my friends, they're already married and they have kids. So their kids, we hang around, we play dominoes, we talk to the kids in Creole, like they're babies. So they, you know, it's like just because we're not back either East or Miami, we want to make sure that our kids or our family grow here and understand the language too, and not, you know, just, you know, some people, they come here and they just forget it. They're like, oh yeah, I'm Haitian. And you say, oh, speak Creole. And like,
yeah, you're pacab.
I know my moon name. I eat lure green. Yeah, lure. I'm like, get out of here.
No, that's amazing. It's so important to, you know, stay close to your culture no matter where you are. And you know, I'm from the East Coast. I know you're from Miami. And the Haitian community there is huge. So we feel that sense of, like, pride and community around us all the time, where we don't necessarily have that here. We have to create it ourselves, like how you did with your friends. So it's so important that the culture doesn't get lost. Because truthfully, my curl is starting to slip because I don't get to practice it with anybody. So you keeping
really?
Me on my toes right now.
Wow. It's funny because one of our friends, he came here. He came here, and he's from Fort Lauderdale. Mm-hmm. So he came here, and we used to just bag on him because he couldn't speak Creole. And within, like, 2 years, like, we were just hanging out. And we always speak Creole, but it's like, okay, we're not paying attention.
Yeah.
But I was paying attention to him speaking. I was like, Petey, uka pale Creole kunya. And it was just like, because he's around us, and he hears it a lot. So we make him speak Creole.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. Now I can, you know, call my mom, or maybe she'll be watching this later and say, see, Christine, I told you never to lose touch with Curl and who you are. It'd prove to come in handy later on. But We're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about you and your budding career right now. You're killing it on Survivor's Remorse. I actually watched episode 7 before I got here, so I'm all caught up on season 4, which is cool. We saw you briefly in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
You were doing a little run for Cam.
Went to go, you know, eat my cereal. Went to go get the ring.
Get the ring. The focal point of this episode. If you guys have been following Survivor's Remorse, which I'm sure you are if you're tuned into this right now, chatting it up with us, Cam is, you know, really getting serious with Allison, right? And he wanted to propose, so he got you to do his bidding, as per usual, and get what he needs. Mm-hmm. And just a really funny episode. There's always so many, like, little gems that Survivor's Remorse drops in with doses of comedy, and I think that's why the show works so well.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like, the writers are phenomenal. And
yes.
The showrunner, Mike O'Malley, he's a playwright. So, you know, when you follow the show and the dialogue, it's just so different.
Yes.
It's different. Like, people don't, you look at any other show, people are not talking the same way we're talking on our show.
Absolutely.
And it brings us back to the stage. Because most of us been on stage or went to school for theater. So it brings us back to the essence of why we're doing this. And it just works. It just helps us out.
It does. And it seems like the cast has a really great chemistry together. Like the comedic timing, even just the delivery of the lines. And mm-hmm. it just works so well the way you guys have set it up.
Yeah.
And I think it's awesome.
It's a dope show.
Definitely dope.
You should be watching. As a matter of fact, just to let you guys know, next week is going to be a twofer.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. You guys heard it here first from his own mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be cool.
So it's going to be an hour. It's going to be an hour. Yeah.
That's awesome. Because mm-hmm. that's what kind of bugs me about this show. The episodes are only 30 minutes. And then, like, you know, you get through all the you're like, damn, it's over. Like, you want more.
Because, like, if you think about it, I think it's with all comedies. All comedies are usually 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like only dramas. You don't catch a drama being 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But with comedy, I guess that's how it's made, that it's mostly 30 minutes. But you hear a lot of people on Twitter like, oh man, I wish the show was, you know,
an hour. Lot of people have spoken out about that.
Me too. I wish it was an hour also.
So is that something that's going to be just like a one-time deal for next week? Is that something that the writers are...
Because it's like...
Because you're wrapping up the season.
It's wrapping up the season. It's a part... It's basically like a part one, part two.
Okay.
So like how they did it past season.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning when they did like the first two episodes together.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, you know what? Since this is like a part one, part two, we're going to basically make this an hour.
I like it. I'm here for it, and I'm excited. And we gotta wait forever for season 5, but that's the point. So we're gonna just backtrack a little bit.
Back it
on up, just so that everyone can get a chance to know about your start and how you got involved with Survivor's Remorse and just acting out here in general. I know, you know, I creeped your IMDb and looked through your credits.
She's a creep.
I'm the ultimate creep when it comes to my guests.
Yeah, keep it on the down
low.
What? Nobody's supposed to know. Yep, that's what she's doing.
Oh my God. Yeah, but I noticed that you have some credits in the sound department and camera and electrical and other things.
You know what?
Like you've got your hat kind of everywhere.
I'm gonna tell you this. So those credits from like sound department and all that, I think it's because it's the movie called, what is it? It's on there, like
Voodoo?
The Voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So basically, we shot it like a documentary.
Okay.
So I play a character named Teddy.
Okay.
And I'm the sound guy. So we went to Haiti. We shot this movie in Haiti, and how we did it was we did it like a Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
We basically got down there. Everybody thought we were shooting a documentary about voodoo, but we were shooting a movie.
Okay.
So in the film, it's all improvised.
Really?
It's all improvised. Like, but when it's between like the core cast, we'll go, okay, cut, let's do this, blah, 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 blah. This is what we need to do. But when it comes to meeting like the voodoo priest and going to the ceremonies, that's all improvisation.
Wow.
All improvisation. So, but I was the sound guy because I was the sound guy on the movie, and everything was on me because I had the boom.
Yeah.
I had to mic everybody.
Wow.
And I basically had two jobs at once.
What do you think is harder? Like acting or doing both? I mean, I guess that could be challenging.
You know what? Both. I would think sound is harder because as an actor, you go, cut, let's go, let's take it back.
Yeah.
But if you shot something and you don't have the sound and it was like great, it's your ace.
It sure
you
know what is. I'm saying? So, the pressure is real.
The pressure is real, and I'd rather act than be a sound guy. It's very hard. It's funny, I had to shadow this guy doing that. I was shadowing this one guy for like a week, like learning how to use the boom, use the sound equipment.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, oh my God.
Does it make you that much more cognizant of those elements when you are acting?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Let me not mess up.
Yeah, because you know what I'm saying? Like, I know, it's so funny, since I did this, I know where the boom is. I know, like, voice level. So I tend to just use, because the boom could pick, if it's a great mic,
yeah,
it could pick up everything. So I tend to use, like, my inside voice when I'm acting.
Is this your inside voice right now?
This is my inside voice.
What's your outside voice?
Hey, what's up, man? What's going on? We over here, you know what I'm saying, chilling, doing this thing at AfterBuzz TV. That's
hey, I like it. I like that.
Outside voice, yep.
The outside voice, inside, outside. Okay, cool. Lots of gems to be learned from there. I got to use my outside voice because, you know, I'm excited. We're chatting it up right now. So aside from being on Survivor's Remorse, you were also briefly on Shameless, which I love Shameless so much.
It's a great show.
It's one of my favorite shows ever. And yeah, you were only on there for a little while. I wish your character had stayed.
It's funny because
you went out with a bang, like literally
a bang.
Yes.
I literally went out with a bang. The thing is, this is how Survivor's Remorse connects. Because I did Shameless, and Michael Malley, who was the showrunner for Survivor's Remorse, was an EP over at Shameless. And he was on set while I was working. He's like, yo, man, I'm going to work with you again. And you hear it. It's Hollywood. And you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever. Sure. And then I see Mike again on the golf course. It was during some 4th of July thing. And I was like, hey, man, my name. He's like, man, I know what the fuck your name
is. You Mike, left an impression.
Hey, Mike was like, yo, man, I got my show. He was like super excited. He's like, I got my show and I want you to be on it. And I looked at him. I was like, He's like, no, I'm serious. I want you to be on my show. And 2 years later, I'm on Survivor.
Here comes Squeeze. Yeah.
Here comes Squeeze.
So were you a fan before getting on the show?
It was something new to me. I remember my roommate. Oh, it sounds different when you say ex-roommate. He's not my roommate anymore.
Okay.
My roommate was auditioning for Cam's role.
Really?
Yeah.
Small world.
For the pilot. And I read it and I was like, man, this is a lot of dialogue. I was like, this is a lot of dialogue. And when I watched it, I was like, huh, it works. Oh, this is dope. I'm the type of person that when people are like, oh yeah, this is a dope show, you should watch it, I go, I'm not watching it. So it took me a year to watch it.
Okay.
So I seen like, I think the first episode of like season 2.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, this is dope. I was like, is this the first season? So I went back to the first season to watch it. And I was like, yo, this is great.
I have to admit, I'm the same way. I was a little late on getting on Survivor's Remorse. Because I'm the same way. Like, if someone's telling me a show is super hyped, I'm like, let me just wait. Mm-hmm. Let me just wait, because it could either get canceled or just go left. And then I'm not interested. But I'm so glad I gave it a watch, obviously, because it's so unbelievably woke. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I was prepared for that. When I read the premise of the show, and I was like, okay, you know.
It tackles. And that's why I think the writers over there at in the writers' room for Survivors and Moors, like, they're very brilliant, because they tackle day-to-day stuff, day-to-day situations. And I'm like, man, so from going from FMG, or is it FGM? Female mutual, FMG. Going from FMG to going to a plantation to, you know, basically tackle things that's going on in the black community. I was like, yo, this is a woke show.
It's a woke show if there ever was one. I mean, the fact that Reggie's wife is Missy, like, cut off her natural, her permed hair and went natural within, like, the first season and everything. I was like, wow, this is just hitting me real close to home right now. And I just
the light skin, dark skin situation. Absolutely. It was like, it was hitting you like boom, boom, boom. And to have Chen and Tashina.
Yes.
Oh, Robert and Tashina to be characters that are in love with each other. You never really see that. You never see an Asian and a like or anything. Like, oh, this is an African American woman with an Asian man. That's totally different. That's like way left field.
Yeah, you know that's not something we see on TV or in movies or just, you know, a conventional what love looks like to some people, you know? Mm-hmm. It's very, like, black and white or whatever the case is. So I like that. I love that they challenge that ideal, and I love how strong of a personality she has, and he counters her in every way with his equally strong, straight kind of minded, you know, analytical. He just goes on these rants of just, like, wow, dude, you kind of missed the social cue, but, like, it's funny.
Yeah.
And how,
like, let's say with the podcast episode.
Yeah.
When he basically, you know, he was talking like, oh, as a Asian male, and then somebody got at him, and then he, you know, he broke it down like how he feels. And then to have Tashina come and, like, stand up for her man, I'm like, oh, this is dope. This is something you don't see on TV. You know what I mean? They might just cookie cut it like, oh, it's okay, honey. This don't. She's like, I'm from the streets. She just went off, you know. And it's great. It's just different TV.
It is, and I really hope it is here to stay, because we need some of that on TV. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Who's your other favorite character on the show besides yourself? Or is there any other character on the show that you'd want to play?
Another character?
Nope.
But I have, I like Chin's character.
Yeah.
I like Reggie's character, Ron Rico's character. I like everybody's characters because everybody comes in with a different, like, hint of something. It's just like a bowl and you just dropping. Like Imchuk, you can just see her colors, you know, it's like up and down. She comes with comedy and then she has the drama. Like, you can see her colors, and you can see Reggie, you know, wanting to do things like for his family, but at the same time, you know, he has his family of his own, like with Missy, and it's just, you learn everything from everybody on that set. You learn everything from everybody.
I'm sure there's like tons of laughs on set, because
we trip out.
I bet
we clown. We clown. It's like a family. It's, when it's like cut. You know what I'm saying? Missy, Imchuk is over there cracking jokes. You know, her and Cam, well, her and Jesse are fighting and playing around, taking stuff from each other. It's like a very dysfunctional family.
Just like
very dysfunctional.
Just like on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I can dig it. Well, can you tell us anything without giving away too much about what's next for Squeeze or anything we can expect from his character to change or grow or something?
Squeeze, in all honesty, I think if, let's see, I'm hoping if we get a fifth season.
So you guys haven't been greenlit yet for the fifth?
We don't know. I think with Squeeze, I think you'll see a difference. I think with my character, it's still growing. But if we go fifth season, I know it'll be totally different. Because I was just spitballing things with him.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, you know, if we come back, this could be an episode. And he's like, yeah, that'll be dope. You know what I'm saying? And that's how it is. You just talk to the man with the power and just like, hey, man, he should do this. And people are asking. People are saying, like, yo, Squeeze should hang out with Cam and Reggie.
I was going to bring that up. Like, bringing him kind of into the fold and with the central characters.
Exactly. Yeah. Instead of, like, you know, always being with M-Chuck or... Why can I not remember Tashina's character's name?
We're gonna
Ma, that's all.
Ma. It works.
Ma.
Ma.
But yeah, I think at the end, okay, at the end of the season.
Cassie,
boom. Yes. At the end of the season, you start seeing like Squeeze with Cam. Now he's hanging out with them.
Yeah.
So I think if we roll out another season, you'll start seeing us all more together. Like,
I want to see that.
Like, in the first season, you saw it, like, in the beginning with me and Reggie. Like, I mean, the third season, in the beginning, it was me and Reggie. Because I was his assistant.
Yeah.
It's like, they're doing this to me. They're like, you take him. Oh, no. I'm going to take him. You go over here. No. Ew. Damn, where's Squeeze going? Okay, go with Cam. So they pass me around like a damn basketball. But I need somebody to hog me. I need either Cam or Reggie to hog me and, you know, just to show more of my character.
Yeah, and show your character some attention, kind of just help you become a man and, you know, be the guy that they need in that circle, which I think it's great right now because where you're at right now is like a perfect mix of like comedic relief and... just a good offset for, like, how intense those characters are. So I think the dynamic works pretty well. So I'm going to segue into some discussions about Haiti while I open this, if this is possible.
I'll open it for you.
Oh, look at
listen,
you.
You
right.
You just did this.
Because I'm on camera, guys.
Listen. We Haitian. We do this.
Yep.
There you go. Bow. Memongoa.
Awesome.
You're going to have to peel.
I have to peel one out.
Yeah. Oh.
This is a nice little intermission, guys. And if you haven't had one of these yet, please do yourself a favor, a Haitian favor, and try these amazing.
Go get your mango.
Shout out to you. So. So you spent some time in Haiti, obviously shooting that movie. Are you involved in any other projects in Haiti right now in terms of, like, just, you know, giving back and staying connected with the community there, considering so much has happened to the island within the last, like, 10 years. I mean, we could go in depth if you really want, but...
It's, so, we did the movie in Haiti. Hopefully we find out if we get a deal with someone or Netflix or whatever so we could push that out. Last May, I went to Haiti with a couple of my friends, so we can basically figure out, because I am so done with a lot of the NGOs in Haiti, and we're like, yo, we got to figure out what we need to do. So we want to make a community center And we're going to start in Jacmel first. That's where my dad is from.
Okay.
We want to start in Jacmel, make like a makeshift, probably like, well, you guys can't see the room, but probably like two rooms.
Okay.
This size together and make like a, have like solar power, and have like lights so they could go and study and have books there so they could learn or whatever the case may be. It's just like a community center for the kids. And then from there, we just want to build that and grow to go to different cities. So Jacmel, Port-au-Prince, Okap, go all around Haiti and just, you know, just planning a statement like, yo, we want to do. And we want to do it just solely on us. Like, you know, our friends, we were like, oh, we should ask people for money. And I'm like, nah, we could. But at the same time, we want to make it run itself. Like,
right.
We want to have it susceptible to run itself or have someone there, like, to open the doors for the kids mm-hmm. and then at a certain time close the door. Have you been to Haiti?
I have. You know how it is. Yeah.
You know how in Haiti, and this is so crazy. People don't understand how in Haiti, a lot of people build homes, but then they have, like, a little efficiency or studio for you LA folks and it's like a makeshift studio and people live there and that person that's living in that studio is taking care of the house while the person is not there. So that's what we want to do. We want to build a nice community center and then have like a little efficiency studio type of thing for somebody and they stay there rent free and all they do is just open the doors for the kids and close it. And that's our first project. And I want to do that. Like, ever since I was a kid, I always told my parents, like, yo, I want to go back to Haiti and do something for, you know, our country. And they're like, you know, Haitian parents, they always like,
Tande
oula, no wose tazini, uka, alekola, bon job. And you know, a good job to Haitians is a lawyer.
A doctor.
Doctor.
A nurse.
Nurse. Nurse. Nurse.
Nurse. Nurse. Well, it's just so funny that you bring that up because we know that reality so well.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're both somehow in the entertainment business.
And then being here is like, it's like, oh yeah. Like even till today, my parents know that, oh yeah, he's on TV, but yeah, nothing. It's like,
really? So your parents, were they like supportive of you wanting to act early on? Were they
not,
were just
no,
like...
No. My mom, yes. My dad, no. My dad was like, what is this foolishness? What is this acting stuff? I remember the funny thing is, my mom worked at a school called, and it's a part of Miami-Dade College, work at a school called New World School of the Arts.
Okay.
So ever since I was a kid, I was in a magnet program.
Okay.
So I was in choir, you know, and then I transitioned to acting. And I was supposed to go to New World School of the Arts, but I chose to go to Miami Beach High School because I wanted to play football. But I knew I wanted to act. My mom was like, you know, she was the one like taking me to meet like agents and they were raping us back at the time. Like, oh, $800 for headshots and stuff. Like it was crazy. But my mom was like, you know what? This is what he wanted to do. I'm going to, you know, support him. My dad was like, hell no. Why are you giving him money? This is stupid. It was just because but now I understand why he was the way he was. It's because he come from a country that he came here back in the early or mid 70s and he's like, yo, I just want to come here and do something for my family. And once they find like a career or a job, it's like, we made it. Like,
yeah,
we made it. And, but in our minds, we're like,
that's not our ceiling.
That's like, not our ceiling.
We can keep going.
That's not our ceiling. So, can I tell you a story?
Please,
I want to tell you the story of me coming to California.
Yes.
So my parents, so when I graduated high school, my parents were like, yo, at the before I graduated high school, like I guess in the 90s, late 80s, and throughout the 90s, my parents had their own business. Mm-hmm. But then my parents started to work for Miami-Dade after like Hurricane Andrew. I think that was like 94. That's when like their business started to go like
go under a little.
Because of the hurricane. And my dad's business, like now the internet was popping off, so they didn't need him. He was like the conduit of clientele with people buying merchandise, and he was doing import export. So his work just started to wither away. So they start working at Miami-Dade. I graduate high school, and my parents are like, okay, since, you know, we work at this college, you could come here for free, and we're going to give you, like, how much was it? It was, I think, like $7,000. They gave me, like, $7,000, $8,000 check, right?
Yeah.
They're like, go buy yourself a car and find yourself a job and go to school here, and you're straight, right? I was like, all right, cool. But I was like, damn, is that what I want to do? I was like, nah. So I wait until the check cleared. And I was like, I start buying luggages. I start buying stuff. And my parents were like, what are you doing?
Where are you going?
I was like, I'm out. I'm gone. And they're like, where are you going? I got it all. Like, your parents,
listen, it's like looking in the mirror, because that's the same reaction I got from my parents.
So. And I was like, yo, I'm coming to college out here. And they're like, what are you talking about? Blah, 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 blah. You could go to school here for free. And then you could go become, work in the government, become lawyer. And they're like, I don't want to do none of that. And like, my parents literally shut me out for like a year or two because I was gone and they were mad. But I was like, I see something different for me. I need to leave. I need to plant my base in California. I knew I wanted to be an actor, so I had to like do something and move. Like I had to get out of the nest.
Get out of your comfort zone completely.
And it made me a better human being. You know, it made me a better man. So now they're like, oh, look at our son. But it was a lot of years and they're like, oh, you talking about this acting stuff, it's not working, blah blah blah. You should go back to go to school, go back to get your master's, go to law school, blah blah blah. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. But when it started working, then they're like, oh,
then it's, I've supported him all along, he's always been such a great
my dad
actor.
Would tell you the truth, he's like, I didn't care, I didn't want him to do it, because I was one of those kids that I was just jumping from. I was playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped playing baseball, playing football. I was like, I was always trying new things that I didn't stick with anything, you know? And so my dad was like, oh, this is going to be a fad. This is a phase.
Yeah, it's probably hard for them to wrap your head around being so passionate about something mm-hmm. when they've seen that happen.
Yeah. You know, so I was just like, now they're proud. You know, they're proud parents, but at the same time, it was like, you know, you could still go get a law degree.
They're always going to hold out hope.
I'm like, I'm not going to no damn law school. It's over.
Wow.
I'm done.
I think you've absolutely found your niche and your talent, and mm-hmm. you're in the perfect place to be pursuing that.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a good place for us to talk about what's next for you. I know you've been very vocal on social media about wanting to play
Marcus
Garvey, which... Once I saw the side by sides, I was like, "Damn! Like, why hasn't this happened already yet?" Are you like getting mentally ready for that when the door knocks and you're ready to go?
Before I talk about that, I want to say I have a film, not me.
Okay.
I'm in a film called Skin in the Game.
Okay.
And it's with the same group of same Ava DuVernay's camp.
Yes. She's amazing.
Yeah. And, did 13th, did Selma. And we just, I think two weeks ago, or was it last week? They submitted to Sundance. Right. So, and all hopefuls, and me personally, I think it's going to go. Me personally. I just think it's going to go because 2 years ago, I made a prophecy that I will be in Sundance 2018. 2 years ago. Wow. Not even knowing about this project or whatever the case may be, I knew I was going to be in at Sundance. So I'm like, yo, this is what's going to take me to Sundance. So that's what's in the works. During ADR, I seen a little snippet of the film. I'm like, wow, I can't believe that's me. Because it's a different person. I'm not doing comedy or anything like that. I'm just, it's all drama. It's all dealing with.
Is that challenging for you?
I love the challenge.
Yeah.
I love the challenge. And that's why I want to do Marcus Garvey.
Makes sense.
Because ever since I was a kid, people always come to me, like Jamaican folks, be like, yo, you look like a young Marcus Garvey. As a kid, I was like, who the hell is Marcus Garvey? Like, okay. All right, cool. And then when I got to college, I started to learn about Marcus Garvey. And I was like, man, why haven't they done a story of Marcus Garvey yet? And so I was in Vancouver. Well, rap party, hanging out with Isaiah Washington. He brought it up to me again. Mm. He was like, yo, you look like Marcus Garvey, man. You ever thought about playing him? I was like, yeah. You know, I was like, other actors around been saying that to me, too. So fast forward, we meet again in Vancouver. We're sitting, we're talking about it. He's like, yo, if you want to do this, you got to, you know, got to go ahead and go for the gusto and push forward. I was like, okay, cool. And then that's when, after that meeting, that's when I was sitting home. I was like, let me put this picture side by side and put it on Facebook. I mean, on Instagram and Facebook. And I put it up and just got a lot of folks just talking about it. Like, yo, you look like, oh my God, God's ears to, I don't know the saying, something like your ears or your mouth to God's nose.
Your mouth to God's ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Manifesting it. Speaking into existence. All
speaking
that good
into
stuff.
Existence, right? So I was like, cool. So I put it up and people hit me up from New York like, yo, this be dope. Like directors and people that are Garveyites. They're like, yo, we should write this. And I'm like, man, you're in New York. I need somebody here. You know what I mean? And I said that to myself. I'm like, I need somebody here. The director for Skin in the Game, he was like, yo, man, I saw that picture. It's powerful. You look like him. We should try to do something. I was like, in my head, I was like, we? You trying to be a part of this? He's like, we talked about it. He's like, man, bump it. I want to be a part of it. Let's go. And so I've started doing marketing, like to tackle like millennials. Like,
yeah.
Because I know and I understand what millennials think about and what would catch their eye. And I start doing the marketing stuff for it. And he's doing like the storytelling part. And we're trying to bring those bridges together and basically take it to their family and see if we can
create
get
like
the rights. And get the rights. First you have to get the rights from the estate. Once you get the rights from the estate, the family estate, then you can go ahead and move forward. So right now we're trying to put together a pitch deck.
Okay.
Which, like I said, we're millennials. We're, you know, like people don't want to read 20, 30 page treatment these days. They're like, oh my God, this is a lot of.
Listen, all you got to do is show them that one pic side by side and be like, boom.
No,
give me the job.
I wish it was that easy. But people were like, huh? But who are you? Yeah. Catfish. What have you done? And, you know, they might start throwing other names out that they think. So we want to make sure we have everything concrete before, you know, we start taking it to these people or that people or whatever the case may be. So that's what,
I can tell you're passionate about it.
I think it's a story that needs to be told. And like, a lot of people don't understand. He's basically, you know, you have Frederick Douglass, you have W.E.B. Du Bois, you have A. Richard and Philip A. Randolph. You have all these people that's like grassroots, and then, but you know, people know these folks, but they don't ever really talk about like what Marcus Garvey was trying to do for black people of that time. Like, I'm basically, I want you guys to do for self. Do for self, and we can do it.
And that's a radical concept to introduce.
Yeah.
You know, and have people be like, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And he had people like, he galvanized people together to like actually like, oh man, I believe in this guy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. He he was on the market. Like, I'm talking about Wall Street market, had shares and companies and all. And I was like, damn, that's powerful. That's like powerful.
It's a powerful black symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, I'm excited. I've got the chills already. I want to see this happen. If I need to like head out on Burbank Boulevard with a sign to make it happen, we'll make it happen. And I know the AfterBuzz viewers will do the same because they want to see more of you.
She said on Burbank Boulevard. With a sign. Right by the car wash.
Yes, absolutely. I'm probably cuter than the sign that they have there anyways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, this is exciting. I'm really happy for your success on Survivor's Remorse. And
thank you.
Really looking forward to what you have going on next.
Thank you.
Lots of good things happening. So before I let you go.
Before I let you go. Can I get a good kiss night? Whatever it says.
I was going to ask you to sing, but you already did it. No. So.
Those days are over.
Oh my God.
That singing stuff is over. Now, if they say, hey, Catfish, we want you to play Fats Dominoes. I'd be like, yeah, I can play piano and sing. I'll go back to work.
Oh my God. So, I mean, I know it's kind of trivial, but at this point, are you so tired of people asking you how you got your name? Because
it's one of those things that I used to.
I'm sure it comes with the territory. It's such a unique name.
It comes up, and I used to have like different reasons. Like, I was like, oh my God, people ask me so much. I'll say this, or I'll say that. I'll just change it up all the time. Reason I have the name is because my high school football coach gave it to me when I was like 13 years old. I didn't like the name in the beginning, but he told me the real reason why he gave it to me, and it means being I was resilient. Like, Catfish would never give up. You know, it'll try to survive as long as it can.
Mm-hmm.
It lasts through droughts. They just dig themselves in like they basically dig a hole and cover themselves and live off the moisture of the sand of the soil, and so they could survive. And he's like, "You never give up. You pout a lot. You pout a lot about a lot of stuff, but." You never gave up, so that's why I gave you the name. And I was like, oh, dope. You should have told me that in the beginning.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's, like, low-key such a blessing in disguise of someone speaking that into your life.
Mm-hmm. And I tried to get rid of this name. I tried. But it did not. Like, once it caught fire, like, again, once I went to college here, because I went to college, I went with a friend. And once he was calling me, like, Catfish on campus. I was like, no, don't. Everybody's like, oh man, your name's Catfish. Like, no, we're not calling you your government name.
But you know, I get that.
We're not calling your government name Tyrone, Chad, Cecil.
Oh, cool. Well,
Cedric, Alfred.
Alfred.
That's actually my dad's name.
Is it?
Yeah.
Alfred.
Alfred.
Yeah, I had to say it in the Haitian accent. It doesn't make any sense, you know?
Yeah.
But I think, though, like I said, that's such a blessing in disguise for someone to see that in you. And I feel like that's something that's going to follow you in a way that you may not even realize.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess on that note, you know, like, you tried so hard to get rid of that, but it ended up being something that people know you as. Is there any advice you have for maybe young actors or entertainers who are trying to either brand themselves or just kind of stand out in a way and, you know, embrace the things about them that make them different?
I would say, you know what? It's so crazy. I think these little kids know how to brand themselves better than I know how to. I'm still sitting here like trying to figure out how a 10-year-old have like 500,000 followers on Instagram, right? And Twitter and all this stuff. I'm like, dog, what are you doing? How?
The parents. It's probably they're parents. Creating content for them on a daily basis.
It's probably the parents. But I would say, you know, if you find something that you love to do and you want to brand yourself doing that, then, you know, do it and stick with it. And you know what? You can always rebrand yourself. You don't have to stick to this brand. If it's not working for you, just keep it pushing. Move forward. Don't stick with something knowing that it's not working for you.
Yeah.
Like if your name is Lil Nook Nook, if Nook Nook is not working for you anymore, change it. Nook Nook, when you think of Nook Nook, you think of dude in the hood, he's ready to rob somebody. So get away from Nook Nook and, you know, and just go with Brandon.
Brandon. That's a nice one. Brandon.
Brandon for Brandon.
Like you can trust him.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Catfish? I don't know. People like, the weirdest things are when people come up to me, and this is the ones I despise. Your name is Catfish? So you like catfishing people?
Oh, my God.
Like, why would I want to name myself after a show?
That's so weird.
I'd be like, that's the first thing that comes out of their mouth. You like, I mean, like, yeah, I just go with it now. I go, yeah, I catfish a lot of folks.
Yeah. I have a couple of different, you know, mm-hmm. bot accounts.
Yeah.
Things that I just, you know, go on there and start trouble.
Yeah, I start trouble. I'm a troll. I like to catfish people. I like to play like I'm a girl one night and then, you know, play like I'm somebody from Asia. Like, I don't know. Why would I want to catfish? Like, I think it's the stupidest.
I don't know why anyone does it, but it's definitely a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never been catfished. Have you?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
I can't get catfished.
Why not?
I am catfish.
Set that one up and it was like, woo. I love it. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Well, it has been so great chatting with you and getting to just know more about your story. Mm-hmm. And I'm really looking forward to your film in Sundance. Crossing my fingers for you and everything that you have going on.
Look, it's, you know, some people be like, hey, man, if you want something to work out for you, you shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
But I've always been the person that go against the grain. I'm a true believer. Like, if you want something, you know, you got to speak it.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, like, this is the first film, I think, that probably we tried to, well, me being a part of a movie that's probably tried to submit to Sundance. And I'm just hoping with the camp that's around the film, hopefully it give us a chance for them to watch it, you know, to watch it and be like, oh, this is dope. Oh, this is what, cause it's dealing with trafficking. It's dealing with trafficking little girls, you know, and that's stuff that this is what's happening. Like especially in DC with trafficking the little girls in DC, the 55 girls that went missing.
Absolutely.
It tackles that. And so it's something that it's a story that needs to be told and it needs to be brought out to the spotlight as I see it right there. After Buzz TV spotlight.
Hey, love the plug.
Pooh, because I am the plug.
No, but for real, on a serious note, like, you're totally right about Skin in the Game, and I want to see that.
And, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
See, that was my outside voice. Erica Ash is also in it.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
I'm looking on IMDb right now.
Erica Ash.
Absolutely right.
Is also in it. She is the protagonist.
Lena.
Yeah.
Well, that is exciting. Again, thank you so much for these mangoes and bringing a bit of Haiti into the AfterBuzz TV studio. I
wish they could smell me. Because I smell like Haiti.
You smell like Haiti. In the best way possible,
in the best way possible.
In the best way possible.
I know y'all like, ooh, no.
Smells like success, if I do say myself.
Yes.
But for real, it's been dope catching up with you. Let the viewers know where they can find you on social media.
On social media, you can find me on my couch playing NCAA. Oh, on social media, you can find me on Instagram, Catfish Young. Facebook, Catfish Young. Twitter, Catfish Young. I'm trying to go with the beat. Yeah. So, yeah. Catfish Young, all platforms.
All platforms.
Yep.
Dope. Yep. And you guys know you can find Survivor's Remorse on Stars, so be sure to check that out. Next week is the season finale.
You get a 2-for-2-fer.
Twofer, guys. That's big news. Twofer.
That's an hour.
Hour-long episode, and hopefully seeing more of you. And you guys can find me on social media at Christine Bean with 3 E's. Thanks for chopping it up with us today on Spotlight On. See you guys next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.